documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, along with Vicki Davis, here with you. Nice to have you with us again on the 12th of August, 2017. And here we are, another busy week and a lot of eventful things happening in our world. Good morning, Vicki.
Good morning.
Yeah, you were telling me just before we came on the air that you were watching an interesting video from the Aspen Institute.
Yeah, I've been looking back into the Aspen Institute, and I found a panel discussion with Madeleine Albright, Condoleezza Rice, Robert Gates, and Nicholas Burns, who was a State Department person, and they were talking about the Ukraine and Russia. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because Condoleezza Rice and Madeleine Albright actually brought Condoleezza Rice into government. Condoleezza Rice was a Russian specialist, and she studied under Madeleine Albright's father.
Hmm.
So that was a bit of history. And what made me find it was that I've been looking back in the 1990s when, you know, the August coup, 1991, and what led up to that and what happened afterwards. So that's how I happened to stumble onto it. And the role that the Aspen Institute seems to have played in that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think there is more to the story there than what I know, what I knew.
Yeah. Well, it's obvious that the world has certainly become a tinderbox. The promise of the United Nations was that they were going to be, you know, diplomatic channels would be opened, everybody would be communicating, and we could avoid all of these conflicts around the world. And yet, since the United Nations has come along in 1945, we've had nothing but conflict.
Now, yeah, nothing but war.
They claim, oh, well, we haven't had a full-scale world war, but when the world is largely at war or threatening to be there soon, I mean, you've got to ask yourself the question, what good are these people doing to any of us?
I think we're on the very edge of it.
I think every indication points in that direction. Every indication. And now I'm sure you have children across the country now that are worried. You have people losing sleep because of the saber rattling that's going on right now with North Korea. And prior to that, it was Russia. And prior to that, it was Syria. So there's always got to be a boogeyman. There's always got to be a threat. And where is ISIS on the map? Where did we just defeat them? Are they gone now? Are they no longer a problem? You know, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda? Where's all the terrorist threats? Hey, where are all the trucks running over people in Europe? You know, isn't it interesting how, you know, when certain things are focused elsewhere, we don't seem to have, it's almost like there's one thing that can happen at a time. It's almost like, Vicki, almost like there's a certain group of people that are directing the affairs of the world. There are certain I just must be one of those crazy whack job conspiracy theorists, right?
Well, I'm right in there with you. I have noticed that. And the dead giveaway, you know, even if people have been absolutely totally asleep, you know, for the last 30 years, the idea that now North Korea is a big threat to us is just absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, I've got an article here as we get into this thing. I've got an article that is talk from the Washington Times, I believe it was, that talks about how, pardon me while I'm trying to get things together here, the how Kim Jong-un, here it is, Kim Jong-un says North Korea won't use nuclear weapons first. This is back from last year, May of last year, May 8th. Dateline Pyongyang. This is in an Associated Press article. North Korea leader Kim Jong-un said his country will not use its nuclear weapons unless its sovereignty is invaded, and announced a five-year economic plan at a milestone Congress of North Korea's ruling party, which entered its third day Sunday. Kim said he was ready to improve ties with hostile nations and called for more talks with rival South Korea to reduce misunderstanding and trust. Now, you're not hearing that from the Western media, but that was last year. Sure, things could have changed. But you're not hearing, I don't think you're hearing this at all. He also urged the United States to stay away from inter-Korean issues. Quote, our republic is a responsible nuclear state that, as we made clear before, we will not use nuclear weapons first unless aggressive hostile forces use nuclear weapons to invade our sovereignty, Kim said, and that's the end of that quote, Kim said in a roughly three-hour speech shown Sunday on the North Korean Central Television. Kim is believed to have delivered the speech at Pyongyang's April 25th House of Culture the day before its content was made public early Sunday. So, anyway, it goes on from there. I just thought this was an important thing to point out because you're not hearing this kind of thing. All you're hearing, he's a crazy man, and, he's unstable, unhinged, you know, and that conjures up fear in the hearts and minds of the people, which is exactly what war hawks want. That's exactly what they want, is you to be scared. They want you to be afraid. They want you to be terrified. Lose sleep at night. Absolutely. Worry until the ulcer forms in your stomach and you've got all kinds of problems, psychological problems. Hey, great. Because we want this because we have to have our war. This is what's happening.
Well, that's how they, the way that they're controlling countries in the world is through their critical infrastructure. I heard a snippet on Alex Jones where he said that North Korea had been working with, I don't know, international groups or somebody, and that they had planned on tourism. Well, tourism, and they built a ski resort and whatever. Mm-hmm. Tourism is one element in the package, the turnkey program for implementing the global transportation system, which comes along with the technocratic tyranny, the fiber optic cable, the computer systems, the whole deal, you know. If you want to look at what the model is the smart city. And the strategy is for complete, total domain awareness, total information, a new model of security for the world. Yeah. And so probably what happened is that Kim Jong-un, or whatever his name is, he may have figured it out. He or perhaps he. I'm not sure, but it would seem that he caught wind that things were not right, and so he stopped the program. And I think that's what happened in Libya, and in the Middle East as well.
Yeah, it's highly likely. I'm trying to get an article here from Foreign Affairs to come up. The whole article was visible last night, and now it's not only the first part of it showing up. It's behind their paywall. But the reason I want to bring this up is because Okay, here we go. I got it on the phone. Couldn't get it on the computer. So let's. It's called The Wolf of Pyongyang. How Kim Jong-un resembles a CEO. Does that sound a lot like the model today?
Yes, it is. It's exactly the model.
They say Western commentators often treat North Korean supreme leader Kim Jong-un as a joke. In private conversations, I have heard U.S. administration officials and military leaders occasionally refer to him as a fat boy, a young playboy, and a laughingstock. Ambassador to UN Nikki Haley has even publicly questioned whether he is crazy. Yet calling the North Korean leader names is not a, it is a mistake. Not because he it is rude, but because it underestimates his abilities. Kim is no buffoon. To treat him like one is to misunderstand the threat posed by North Korea and its leader. And an especially grave mistake today as tensions between Pyongyang and Washington flare up on a regular basis. A better way to view Kim is a new CEO taking over the company. Call it North Korea Inc. Doing so allows observers to bypass discussions of his mental health and instead focus to examine his qualities as a leader. In the business world, the role of a CEO is central to any company's success. An incoming CEO, especially one entering a struggling company, must take control and lead. He must provide his company with a vision and guide its implementation. A new CEO needs to motivate his employees, explain to them where the company is going and why, and regularize processes of performance and evaluation so that expectations are clear. He needs to do this while also culling the ranks and eliminating dead weight and petty factionalism in the ranks of middle management. An effective leader identifies the malcontents, fires, sidelines, or motivates them, and rewards or feeds them to the dogs. But we won't talk about that. We won't mention that. And rewards and promotes those who share his agenda and can move his vision forward. In short, a good CEO is able to get everybody marching in the same direction. These are precisely the steps that Kim is taking. Kim has survived his 6 years as leader of North Korea while instituting a clear personal vision for the country's direction. He is apparently unthreatened by any internal challenges to his role and indeed looks to be comfortably in charge in Pyongyang. The North Korean government shows no signs of collapsing and is even more stable now than it was under his father. The debate about whether Kim is rational is harmful to U.S. foreign policy, making it because it diverts outsiders from addressing the real issues with North Korea, its active nuclear weapons program and horrific human rights abuses, and obfuscates Kim's proven ability to lead his country down a path that external pressure has been powerless to weaken. Viewing Kim as CEO rather than also, it also emphasizes the non-political aspects of his rule, what leaders in any organization must do to create expectations and stability. Now, they go on to, under the heading of North Korea, Inc. Perhaps the most important thing that a new CEO must do is to articulate a bold and clear vision that serves as a metric and motivator for the rest of the firm. Kim's vision for North Korea is clearly articulated by his Byung-jin line. And I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. But adopted by the Workers' Party of Korea, the WPK, Central Committee, in April 2013. Byung-jin calls for the simultaneous development of North Korea's economy and its nuclear weapons, replacing the so-called military-first doctrine of Kim Jong-il. By making economic development a key element of state ideology, Kim has signaled a break from the past. Under Kim Jong-il, you know, his father, and his predecessor, Kim Il-sung, North Korean propaganda emphasized the people's strength in the face of adversity and willingness to suffer for the sake of their country. This positive spin on hardship justified an enormous range of practices, from a campaign pressing North Koreans to eat two meals per day in 1991 when the country was struck by famine, to various worker mobilization campaigns. Kim Il-sung had called for North Koreans to sacrifice for the sake of the country as far back as the Kolyma campaigns of the 1950s, in which ordinary North Koreans were drafted into work units for mass construction and infrastructure projects. I wish I could have printed this out and highlighted a few points here. Anyway, they talk about how they urged the people to donate their labor and, you know, even limit their bathroom breaks, you know, timed bathroom breaks. Kim Jong-un, by contrast, has said, and this is Foreign Affairs, Council on Foreign Relations, theoretically, these CFR spooks know what they're talking about, right? This is what they said here. Kim Jong-un, by contrast, has said that the North Koreans, quote, should no longer be hungry, unquote. Typical of this approach is a speech from 2015. The most important task, and this is Kim Jong-un talking, the most important task facing us today is to improve the people's standard of living at an earlier date. Our people have so far waged an intense struggle to build socialism. They have never enjoyed a plentiful life to their heart's content. Whenever I am reminded of my failure to provide a rich life to these laudable people, who, in spite of their difficult living conditions, have firmly trusted and followed only our party and remained faithful to their pure sense of moral obligation to the great comrades Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il, I cannot sleep. We should provide our people, who have entrusted their all to the party and stood by it, and brave all manner of trials and hardships, together with the party, with the most abundant and happiest life in the world. Now, bear in mind, I mean, that is a political speech. You know, yeah. And politicians say a lot of things and do a lot of other things. And he is a politician. I mean, we have to keep in mind, I mean, even though he's a dictator, he still has to have the support of his people, or somebody's going to off this guy. But as I see him around in pictures, and you only have the pictures, he doesn't look like he's fearful of his safety, unlike the people in our government who are always surrounded by Secret Service. Now, granted, I'm sure he has security around him at all times, too.
All I've ever seen him around is military people. But let me tell you what I heard out of that. It's good cop, bad cop. They're going to be flattering him on his managerial skills. He's a CEO. The idea is to bring in economic development. Of course, economic development is the way that they bring in the technocratic tyranny.
Right.
And
well, they're talking about him hungering for economic development, and where I'm getting.
Well, they want to feed his ego. That's the whole thing that I heard, is they're going to feed his ego on his managerial skills. And the thing is that you notice there that they talked about getting rid of middle management.
Right.
Well, middle management is your institutional memory. And that's what they did to our government. George Tenet got rid of the middle management in the CIA, in all of our agencies of government, under TQM, and in the military under...
you mean total quality management.
Yeah, TQM. Total quality management. And in the Pentagon, it was Six Sigma. But essentially, it's the same program. Get rid of your middle management. Empower your lower level people. Well, what you're doing is you've lost your institutional memory, and you've empowered... people that have no experience, mm-hmm. and so, you know, they just go along with whoever is essentially directing their activities under the idea of flattery, you know.
Right.
You have new ideas. You're innovative. You can do this, and so well, they essentially do. Structure, the fabric of your organization, and that's what happened to our country.
Yeah, and I want to be clear. I am not defending Kim Jong-un. I'm not saying he's a good guy. I want to make that abundantly clear. Nobody is more anti-communist than I am. Nobody is more anti-dictator than I am. But I do recognize when we're being drawn into war. And I try to always recognize propaganda when I see it.
I think we're being drawn into demolition.
Well, that's yeah. I mean, because this, if a war happens, if a war goes nuclear, all bets are off. It's pretty much, it could very well be the end of everything.
Yeah, I don't think there's not. They're not going to go nuclear.
Well, I hope you're right, but never underestimate the power of psychopaths with a lot of power. And I would.
Who are you
hope,
talking about now? Their government or ours?
I'm talking about ours. Anyway, we got a call on the line. And by the way, you're welcome to call in, folks. 844-646-8376. Toll free 844-6-GOVERN. That's 844-646-8376. Hey, Florida, come on in. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Darren. Hello, Vicki. This is Harvey in Florida.
Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Vicki. You started out, Vicki, with a list of who is it, that Aspen Institute, that gang. What were the names? Can you repeat that, please? You still have that?
Yeah. Madeleine Albright, Condoleezza Rice, Robert Gates, and Nicholas Burns.
All right. Well, that's a list of war criminals. These are genocidal maniacs, homicidal maniacs, and war criminals.
Yep.
That's who was invited guest to this Aspen Institute. So all of those people that you mentioned have millions of deaths under their belt. So this couldn't get any sicker. These are some of the worst human beings, and how we in America put up with these people walking around free is unbelievable. They're the ones that should be in Guantanamo. So this is as sick as it gets. And now you're talking about Kim Jong-un. Well, he may be an autocratic leader, but, you know, we do business with many people like that. The
yes.
King of Jordan is one of our main allies. The King of Morocco. And these are people that, and of course, Saudi Arabia, and these are people that rule their people with an iron fist. In Morocco, my friend lives there, and you can never say one word because every single thing is monitored,
wow.
Probably worse than North Korea. And what made them our enemy in North Korea, constant sanctions and war campaigning, war drills.
Yeah.
They have these practice drills with every military might known to man surrounding them to put on these displays of power and threaten North Korea, which we've been doing for, I don't know, as far back as I can remember, probably ever since the Korean War, where we had a call of truce.
Yep.
So this is about as sick as it gets. And I thank you so much for your program and keeping your airwaves open. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Harvey. I appreciate the call.
Right. Yeah, I think the new model for the economy of countries is fascism. It's a partnership between corporations and government. And I believe it is the Chinese model of communism. Actually, it's state capitalism, which means that the government is a partner with profit-making corporation. And so, you know, and I do believe that is the model for the entire world, and it is a tyranny on the people, because corporations just simply want to make money, so it makes slaves of people.
Yeah, this article from Foreign Affairs is basically, I think, arguing that we need to tap into Kim Jong-un's desire to grow his economy. And in other words, engage him rather than, you know, view him as a crazy man who needs to be taken out. And I have mixed feelings about that, because I look at China. You know, that was the argument years ago with China. Now, some might say that it worked out great, but I look at China as using this economic power that they now have as being... They're the new threat. They have been made to be a bigger threat now than they ever have been before. They're in space now. They're working with, you know, if they ever decide to weaponize space, look out. You know, supposedly the United States was, I believe, the initiative to ban weaponization of space years ago. Like so many other things, our country, the leadership, signs these agreements. They make these initial desires, these initial treaties, these moves. Hey, let's do this. Get everybody to sign up. And then they turn around and they're doing it behind the scenes themselves anyway. So,
well, in the whole global scheme of things, I think that the United States leaders in the United States, along with Britain, remember, I think I said last week that I think the Atlantic Charter was really in agreement with Britain, with the British Empire, let me correct that, the British Empire, to be the bodyguard of the British Empire. And so the things that they've wanted to do, you can see the since the end of World War, actually before the war began, you can see step by step movement towards the goal of global governance. And the thing is, what tells the tale is the one size fits all.
Mm-hmm.
Global governance. Now, they say they want to push, devolve the government to where you have local control. But the local control is a facade.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't want local control of anything.
No, they don't want anybody to have control of anything except themselves.
Exactly. That's exactly what it's all about. All right, tell you what, we're at the bottom of the hour now. Let's take a break, and we'll be back in a moment. This is Govern America, 844-646-8376. Toll free, 844-6-GOVERN. And we'll be back in a few. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. The website is governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com is the website for our show. And the website for Vicki Davis, she's got two of them, channelingreality.com. That's channelingreality.com and thetechnocratictyranny.com. And also there is the TVOINews.net, which she is a contributor to as well. That's the Voice of Idaho, TVOINews.net. And they're all up on the website at governamerica.com as well. My email address is radio@governamerica.com. That's radio@governamerica.com. If you'd like to get a hold of Vicki, Vicki, why don't you go ahead and give your email out?
My email address is eyeswideopen@channelingreality.com. Eyes wide open at channelingreality.com, but there's two O's in there, not one.
Yeah, and if you'd like to call in, the toll-free number is 844-646-8376. That's toll-free, 844-6-GOVERN. And I want to get back to North Korea here in just a moment, but first I want to point out that there's something going on right now in, let's see, where is this at? Virginia? The cultural Marxists, we've been talking about this on the show a lot in previous years. They're attempting to completely wipe out our history in the United States. There's a large rally going on today. It's in Charlottesville, Virginia. It's probably going on even as we speak. And the rally is over the city's plan to remove a statue of General Robert Lee. Just last night, a candlelight vigil was held. It was a protest. I guess it was a protest or a march. Some of the participants were carrying little tiki torches. The media and liberals on social media, of course, characterized the whole thing as the alt-right. It's alt-right white nationalists carrying torches. And so they must be the Ku Klux Klan. Or maybe they're just seeing trends in the institutionalized racism that's going on all over the place. And, you know, gangs like Black Lives Matter, and maybe they're just concerned that they're going to be driven to extinction someday, you know?
Well, they're the people that understand the significance of them eliminating our history.
Yes.
And what they're trying to do, I watched that 1990 Moscow Global Forum again, and the idea in 1990 that was expressed by Mikhail Gorbachev, attended by our government officials, Al Gore for one, David Boren for another, the idea is to create a global Earth patriotism.
Yeah, wow. That's
astonishing.
And for somebody to have, for them to be able to do this and do it so openly and so public, sedition, I mean, these are seditious activities.
And they're
doing them right out in the open. So this just shows you the boldness that these globalists have. You know, no more do we have to whisper when we talk about the New World Order anymore. We can just do it and plot it all right out in the open, and nobody cares anymore. It's astonishing.
I know. And, well, what we didn't understand, you know, those of us who were busy working and raising our families and whatever, was that the environmental movement became politicized. It was no longer about trees. And animals and things that we do treasure, we all treasure those things. Mm-hmm. It became a political movement for communism.
Yeah.
And communism and fascism, I think they really are the same thing. It just depends on what side of the money line you're on. If you're an ordinary person like us, it's communism because they basically enslave people, use their labor, and they redistribute the fruits of our to other places. But at the management level of the country, it's fascism.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's like somebody said that green is the new red, and that's where we are today. This candlelight vigil. I have a report here from a local news outlet. Just last night, where this march was going on.
Hey, Dan, I want to rejoin you and just give you an update of what's going on. Still a very large active protest here in front of the rotunda at the University of Virginia. This protest has now ended at the Thomas Jefferson statue on the steps of the rotunda. We think of between 75 and 100 alt-right supporters are in this march. We're not sure who organized it. But this is, again, this comes just an hour after a judge sided with Jason Kessler to allow his rally to take place at Lee Park tomorrow. We just want to leave this on here so you can just see how dramatic this really is. They have been met with some counter protesters, but so far, from what we can see right now, this has been extremely peaceful. Just again, if you're listening to this, that you may hear some graphic language. So we want to warn our viewers that this is unedited footage and you may hear some graphic language you may not want to hear. The main message that I keep hearing them chant is "You will not replace us," which is a key line for a lot of alt-right supporters. Again, there's still so many of them coming down the steps of the rotunda, a very similar sight to what we saw a few months ago back in May at Emancipation Park, where there was a similar torch rally held there after the city council voted to rename the parks and also remove the statue. Police are here. You can actually see there are police here, but so far they haven't really intervened. This has been a peaceful protest. We're not sure who organized it. We're not sure why this is happening, but it all comes just on the heels of a very significant rally that's going to take place tomorrow at Emancipation Park, the Unite the Right rally. It all started about maybe 20, 25 minutes ago, just before the show started down by the Intramural Field. They marched completely through Central Grounds by the Alderman Library and now through the lawn and down the steps of the rotunda in front of the Thomas Jefferson statue. We're still working to find out more information, but from what we can see, it's been a very, very peaceful protest. Just a lot of torches here. So a very dramatic sight if you can just take in this what you're seeing here. We're going to try to work to find out more about this march, and we will bring this to you live as we come up on CBS 19 News at 11.
Okay, so anyway, that was the scene last night as he was describing it. And as I said, that rally is going on right now in Charlottesville. So if anybody happens to be in the area, not doing anything on a Saturday morning, you could go over to that. So,
you know, last week somebody said that we don't really have any domestic intelligence in this country that looks at things like what's happening in the local area. I mean, this is the kind of thing that you get if you devolve power down to a local area. Well, if you have a lot of communists in your area, they're going to erase your history. They're going to implement communism.
Yep.
So this is all part of the strategy of breaking. That is the goal.
Of breaking what? Skype got you.
Oh, I said breaking up the United States. That is the goal.
Yes.
To break it up into management units. Man, we are just so lacking in leadership in this country. It's astounding.
Oh, we've got leadership. It's just the problem is where are they leading? You know?
I don't think we do have leadership. We do not have leadership that is... We have Trump, but Trump...
I'm talking about the bad leadership we have. They're leading us over a cliff.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you break apart an organization, you get chaos. And the Total Quality Management, or Six Sigma, that idea came from one of these management institutes, and I believe it was General Electric, or perhaps one of the consultational attack on our government. You know, it was an attack on our government through other means. Mm-hmm. And any organization that implemented that, you remember the Dilbert cartoons, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and what he said is true. If you break, if all corporations, government, or whatever, they come to be through the definition of systems. If you just come along and just arbitrarily say, okay, we're done with that now. We're going to get rid of all of our middle management, and we're going to have new innovative ideas. What you are getting is chaos. You'll destroy your organization, and you will no longer be functional.
Yeah. Well, we certainly have the chaos. Mm-hmm. I can't argue that point at all. Let's go to San Antonio, Texas. Hello, you're on the air.
Morning, Darren. Morning, Vicki. This
hey.
Is Alan.
Hey, how you doing?
Good morning.
Well, I was doing a lot better before I read our local paper here yesterday.
Uh-oh.
See what you think of this. This is an article on what our city council, at the last meeting, what they approved and talked about and everything. And at the very end, they generally have this little, the council also, supposedly some minor things that they did, I guess, I don't know, in private session or whatever. But get this one here. The council also approved a letter of support for local training assistance with the United States Army Special Operation Command.
Oh, no.
Which will be conducting covert training exercises in the area.
Great.
Read that one more time. Read that again.
Where we went. We're in Bosnia somewhere.
Hey, can you reread that? Just
yes. The council also approved a letter of support for local training assistance with the United States Army Special Operation Command, which will be conducting covert training exercises in the area.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, here we go again with the drills. Everywhere we go. All over
yeah.
the country. You know, what would we have done? How would we have ever survived with all these drills everywhere? You know.
Well, it's it's all part of
the
re-education process. We so that police are ready military. They can just fold right into the military. And
they're not supposed to be operating on American soil, really, right? You know. So what are they conducting covert training exercises for? Covert means hidden. No, they'll probably be running around in everyday clothing. Doing whatever they plan on doing. And, we're not a big community here. We're Fredericksburg is about 10,000 people now. A lot of people in the surrounding area in the hills out here in the county.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's a... it doesn't make me feel real all warm and...
Well, it reminds me of the Jade Helm drills that they were holding.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly that was supposed to be an annual thing, I believe. I'm wondering if this is somehow connected with that. Although, you know, that's a good question. I should follow up on the Jade Helm stuff.
Let me tell you where to actually go back and look is about 1993, the civilian military integration. They planned all of that. That's what I mean. All of this has occurred step by step over the years. And there was a report produced by the Office of Technology Assessment for Congress that had to do with conversion, defense conversion is what they called it. And it was part of the stepping down, or basically what I would say is demilitarization of the United States, integrating defense into our domestic sphere. Mm-hmm. That means paramilitary police. It means our local government repurposed actually to be a defense, an arm of defense, since we would not have a national defense. I will put those links in the show notes so that everybody can read what I found. I haven't made absolute conclusions yet, but that's what it appears to me was the idea was to demilitarize the country and integrate those purposes, those into the domestic sphere. And one of the things that I think is a telltale one is Home Depot, because they talked about using civilian facilities instead of army depots, you know, where they keep all their supplies and stuff, and using domestic facilities. And I kind of suspect that that might have something to do with Home Depot. Also, the commissaries.
We don't have the Home Depot here in town. You know, Fredericksburg, you know, we don't have any industry, you know, so there's nothing vital to protect or anything. You know, all we do is we suck in tourists from around the country and around the world. You know, we're a big tourist spot here. And I guess this is all part of the fusion centers and all everything else, integrating everything into one, so your local police are actually under federal control. And, it goes along with, I guess, the Walmarts. You know, if you look at a Walmart store, most of them are, you know, have parapets on them that look like, you know, gun emplacements. So, you know, little peep slots and everything you can shoot through. And, very strange.
Everything is being weaponized.
I read this and it about floored me. It does not make me feel warm and fuzzy about our government.
No,
it shouldn't.
And the Jade Helm
make you feel warm and fuzzy, because none of it, even though they put it under the guise of emergency management, you know, responding to all emergencies, no matter how big, no matter how small, it's turning our country into a police state. And those fusion center systems, you know, the total domain awareness, those are the same systems that are used on the battlefield for total domain awareness. And when you combine total domain awareness with information awareness for full spectrum dominance, that's what we're looking at. That's the global plan, full spectrum dominance.
Well, and we have to keep in mind, too, in fact, I don't know if both of you knew this, but we have a national security advisor right now who apparently is in bed with George Soros. The International Institute for Strategic Studies, which is partly funded by George Soros, his Open Society Foundations, H.R. McMaster was just involved with that group, and I guess he still is. So the question I had a long time ago was, why isn't George Soros being investigated by the Attorney General under this new administration, given all the havoc and chaos that he's created? And again, sedition. The word sedition comes to mind.
I think they took that out of the dictionary.
Yeah, it does seem like that, because nothing is being done. Nothing's being done. And at what point can we say, all right, you're a part of the problem if you're not prosecuting the people who are causing the problem to the country? How much of it is is just a big game show, a big joke for the American people, and all this back and forth partisan stuff. It's always been for people to digest and argue amongst themselves, while the real plan, the real agenda continues to move forward unabated, unchallenged.
That's what I mean. We don't have any leadership in this country. No leadership at all.
We've got actors up there on stage, and they're just continuing with the never-ending play. You know, the pulling the wool over our eyes, whatever phrase you want to give it. You know, boy, you know, it's so close. We can get, next time we'll vote and we'll get our guy in, and then we'll be safe. You know, it's just all caca. You know, I mean, they've got the people just so cowed and so dumbed down that, you know, they don't see what's really going on. Everyone had hope for Trump. You know, I can say personally that he hasn't disappointed me, because I really had no expectations that he was going to do much to help us anyway.
Well, I will say that I think it's better he be there than the opposite.
I'm not sure it actually makes any difference.
Well, except
the continuation of the slow burn.
Well, I agree.
Getting it over.
Let me finish here. I understand what the problem is, and I understand more than likely they're all playing for the same team, okay? But the problem with this is, at least with Trump there are some things being done that has to be done in order to maintain the illusion. And that in and of itself at least slows down certain things, like the rapid grabbing of our firearms, which was going on under the previous administration. And let's take a look. How many of these false flag shooting events, just referencing my earlier comments about one area, you know, when certain things are happening, it seems to be all the attention is on that and other things are let go. How many of these false flag shooting events are happening since the new administration is taking place? Where, you know, we were having false flag shooting events all over the place. Seems like every single day under the previous administration. And I'm hesitant to call for it, because I'm afraid now that I mentioned it, it'll happen. But
right. You know, I noticed there in the end that they tend to happen in little clusters. You know, you'll have little clusters of these, you know, really advertised shootings. And, yeah, you got to wonder what's in the background, you know, that's really going on that they're trying to cover.
And another thing, too, you're right. We have to understand that our media is a big part in the strategy of the takedown of our country. And so what gets emphasized in the media is what we focus on. But just because there is no focus on something doesn't mean that the wheels of government are not turning in terms of working on legislation or whatever. They could be working on the next big dialectic, you know.
I'll drop off and listen to the rest of your show. Appreciate you giving me some time here, Darren.
Hey, appreciate you calling in. Thank you, Alan. I'll talk to you later.
Because what I noticed about the Trump administration almost immediately was that they picked up where the Bush administration left off. I mean, it was almost like flipping a switch, going back in time, and we're back in the Bush administration, as if, you know, we hadn't changed the presidency. But one thing central planners is that they are good. They are working the left pedal and the right pedal together. Mm-hmm. And so even though they're on these other issues, they have lessened the focus on them, and they've now, you know, brought up the focus on the right stage, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that the wheels of government aren't turning on the left.
Yeah, well, so that's true. Yeah, they never really backed down, and the people that he has surrounded himself with are all the same types of scumbags that have been in previous White Houses. I'm surprised he didn't get Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld in there.
Well, they could very well be consulting, you know, online, and we would never know it, right?
No, we would never know it. That's true. But this McMaster's thing is pretty important. CNN did their defense. Now, how many times have you seen CNN do a defense of anybody in the Trump administration? Why would they? If the guy's really working for the betterment of the country, why would CNN be defending this guy?
While the president's national security advisor and the National Security Council are trying to provide guidance to President Trump as he attempts to navigate an escalating high-stakes showdown with North Korea, they're also facing attacks from outside the White House and from within the White House. Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster, the national security advisor to the president, has been fending off an information and sometimes disinformation campaign against him by a warring faction vying for power under the same White House roof. Allies of the president's senior strategist Steve Bannon and those of his first fired national security advisor, General Michael Flynn.
It's really a fight for the soul of President Trump as he grapples with, should I be more of a traditional national security president, or should I try and be a foreign policy president in my campaign voice?
Bannon received a special waiver to continue to talk to his former employees at Breitbart News, where he served as chief executive, and which he once described as a, quote, platform for the alt-right. It's a website that has launched attack after attack against McMaster in a slew of recent articles. Earlier this week, the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensic Research Lab noted that many of those stories, as well as other attacks against McMaster by fringe websites and figures, including InfoWars, have been pushed on social media using the hashtag FireMcMaster by a former Breitbart employee who now literally works for the Russian government as an employee of Sputnik News. FireMcMaster has also been pushed by fringe conspiracy theorists with social media presences who have occasionally been granted access to the White House briefing room by the Trump team. Also pushing this propaganda, someone not particularly influential, but extremely noteworthy, Michael Flynn Jr., the son and one-time top aide of the man who used to have McMaster's job, General Michael Flynn.
Okay, so the report goes on from there. But this is
you
not
You know who he's
fringe.
Talking about? A Breitbart, a former Breitbart employee is Lee Stranahan.
Okay.
And Lee Stranahan has written extensively on the fraudulent Russian hacking, you know, Russia hacking our voting system.
There you go.
And about CrowdStrike and the British agent who came up with the dossier,
right?
That is all fraud. You know,
yeah, so. And that whole report was fraud. We'll delve into it a little bit when we come back. Stay with us, folks. Top of the hour. We'll take the break. We'll be back in a moment. This is Govern America.
The crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5. This is Govern America, hour number two. It continues to be the 12th of August, 2017, as we get back into it here. We're talking about these H.R. McMasters, the National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster, and the fact that he is funded by George Soros indirectly through the IISS, which is the International Institute for Strategic Studies, and perhaps even other directions as well. But that's the one we know about, and that we before the break we played a piece from CNN talking about how Trump was under siege from outside and from within, defending the Trump administration. When has CNN ever done this? But see, if this guy is their guy, then that's what they want to do. And this is not conjecture. This is not, you know, they talked about conspiracy theorists and the fringe websites and the fringe groups and the nutcases. This is all documented, folks. At least this part of it where he, you know, this IISS part of it. Looking at a Breitbart article right now, McMaster's former group scrubs, then re-adds Soros' financing from the website. They say the International Institute for Strategic Studies, where White House National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster is listed as being a member for 11 years, this week added George Soros' Open Society Foundations and another Soros-financed group to the list of donors on his website in response to a Breitbart News request on the matter. From September 2006 to February 2017, McMaster is listed as a member of the IISS, where he served as consulting senior fellow. The IISS describes itself as a world-leading authority on global security, political risk, and military conflict. A page on the IISS website titled "Our Funding" lists groups, corporations, and government entities that provide funding to the think tank, including during the period of McMaster's work there. From at least last week, when Breitbart News started an investigation of the organization, the active donor page on IISS's website did not mention the Open Society Foundation among the list of contributors, even though an archived version of the IISS funders page listed the Open Society Foundations. And IISS has been listed on the Open Society's website as a grantee of the Global Drug Policy Program of the Open Society Foundations. Anyway, they talked about how they put it, they asked him about it, and then they responded by adding it back and saying that they had left off some other foundations as well.
I'm sure it was just an oversight.
As of Tuesday, the Open Society Foundations was again added to the website. Okay, now, they provided the links, though, and this is the important thing, folks. Now, I don't know how long their links are going to be there. Maybe they don't. I don't think they care. See, this is the thing. I don't really think it may very well have been a mistake, because most people are just not going to care. Most people are not, unless this received widespread attention and people started raising a stink about it. I don't think it's going to matter. But this is the guy that's advising Trump. National Security Advisor, he's in a key position, and he has ties to George Soros. This should be troubling to everybody. I think this is a big deal, because we're being led to believe that we've got a change of the guard, Vicky, a change of the guard. And yet, you know, old cop meet new cop, same as old cop. Trump's got
to know
this.
I don't think we've ever had a military coup before. You know how many? I heard that there are like 8 or 9 generals in the top positions in our government. That's disturbing.
Yeah. So anyway, I'll put all this stuff in the links in the show notes, because I think people need to take a look at it. And at this particular moment, I just checked, just went there. Their funding page does have Open Society on it. So it's undeniable. It's undeniable. But anyway, and the reason why I say that, again, CNN is trying to make this sound like, oh, these are just ad hominem attacks. These are just, you know, fringe groups trying to attack the president. And it's really funny listening to them defend the president.
If that isn't the biggest clue,
right,
that, you know, then I just don't know what to say, you know.
So there's also something that has been called to my attention that I think is also very important. A couple of things. First of all, Ron sent me information here, and you're going to love this, Vicky, if you don't already know it. The National Federation of the Blind. Now, of course, Ron is blind. We have a lot of blind listeners to the broadcast. The National Federation of the Blind are coming out. It turns out a lot of the vending machines are, you know, this is an area where the blind are able to make money. This is an area where they're able to, you know, there's not, obviously because they're blind, they're not able to work a lot of the jobs that sighted people can work. vending machines is an area where a lot of blind people can actually labor and, you know, make money. So it's good for them. It's good for the economy because it keeps them off of, you know, government assistance. Well, now there is a push, evidently, to commercialize rest areas across the United States. The National Federation of the Blind came out with this. I'm trying to see. I guess it's relatively recent. I don't see a date on it at the moment. But they say this is actually a letter that they came out with for Congress, for people to send to the Congress. And it's concerning H.R. 1990, which is the commercialization of interstate rest areas. This is the sample letter that they wrote, and I'll just share this with you. I am writing to urge you to oppose any proposal to commercialize rest areas along federal interstate highways. Rest area commercialization would devastate family-owned businesses, including vending operations managed by blind entrepreneurs. Congressman Banks introduced H.R. 1990, which would allow commercialization, including restaurants and convenience stores at the interstate areas. The president, in his proposed budget, expressed support for the idea of rest area commercialization. Because, hey, commercialization, that's privatization. And privatization is great, isn't it?
It's all part of disintegrating the government.
Exactly.
No more services. The government is a business, and they're going to charge you for everything twice, because what you pay for it once in taxes, and then as they privatize, you pay again.
Yeah. Yeah, it is an enterprise. Mm-hmm. When Congress begins considering the much-anticipated trillion-dollar infrastructure package, we expect public-private partnerships to be part of that discussion. Please understand that while this term sounds good, in practice, it leads to privatizing public assets, which will lead to tolling and rest area commercialization. For the sake of blind entrepreneurs throughout the country, please do all you can to ensure that this does not come to fruition. Under the Randolph-Shepard Act, companies owned and operated by blind business owners are given priority to in managing rest stop vending locations along federal interstate highways. See, I didn't know this.
I didn't either.
And in providing food service on federal property. Nationally, approximately 1,100 highway rest stop vending locations are subject to the Randolph-Shepard priority. The majority of these are serviced directly by blind entrepreneurs and their employees. A rest area commercialization would devastate small businesses, including blind entrepreneurs who manage rest area vending machines under the priority afforded by the Randolph-Shepard Act. If Congress liberalizes restrictions on rest area commercialization, these vending machines will be displaced by full-service restaurants. Even if vending machines remain, travelers will not purchase their water, soda, and snacks from vending machines at rest areas if they have the option to buy them along with sandwiches and meal items from larger competitors located at the rest area. These locations are the sole source of income for most of the blind entrepreneurs, and they rely on the income to support their families and to avoid the necessity of being on public assistance. The unemployment rate of the adult blind population stands at 70%. We cannot afford to lose opportunities at a time when other opportunities are so scarce. When the interstate highway system was created, communities located along highway exits were deeply concerned about the economic impact on their businesses, property values, and local tax base if gas stations, restaurants, and other services were displaced by competitors located at rest areas. Rest area commercialization was prohibited to protect these communities, but is now being floated by the administration as a way to pay for transportation infrastructure improvements. The reasons Congress elected to prohibit commercialization of the rest areas when the system was created are just as valid today as they were then. I understand the need for investments in transportation infrastructure, but we need to find ways to raise revenues in an efficient, effective manner that helps small businesses and blind entrepreneurs, their families, and communities rather than hurts them. Please consider the damaging consequences of rest stop commercialization. when making any decisions about the future of highway rest areas. I thought that was very enlightening.
Yeah, yeah, it is. But the thing is that most of the transportation money, it's not going to build roads, it's not going to build bridges, it's for the technology of the police state. Mm-hmm. That's what it's for. And the federal money. And so they're privatizing, selling off assets of the United States. When I first a transportation plan, I called it the project that ate America.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, because all of the technology that they're implementing, they don't need this technology. In high traffic corridors, like in California, that technology is important, but that is a state issue. It is not a federal issue. You know, their commute traffic is it's a domestic problem within California. We don't need that kind of technology here in Idaho. There's not a city in Idaho that needs that technology, including Boise.
Yep.
But yet they're implementing it because it is a all-encompassing system of total domain awareness and total information awareness for full spectrum dominance.
Yeah, I keep saying it too.
I'm going to keep saying
that. That's okay. That's fine. People need to hear it. This privatization push, and they're talking about bringing commercial things to rest stops. That is the first step. Why have it managed by the government if you're going to have it to be the whole thing be a private enterprise? So this is the first stop, the first step rather, toward complete and total commercialization. And this is in keeping with everything else that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. The idea, as I understand it, of the open society really ultimately means the end.
No borders. That's how I take it.
Yeah, no borders. Because they will be able to manage the planet through these technocratic systems.
Yep.
Anything that moves, they will, you know, sound an alarm and you'll have eyes on you. You know, what is this person doing? They're moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they, of course, they'll know your whole history just instantly, you know, as soon as you move. It's such a nightmare future. I just can't even, anything that I've read doesn't begin to approach the nightmare that I see as a future of living on this planet.
Yeah, and it's horrible to have to say that, but I agree with you. I totally, completely agree with you. Another problem here, you know, and everything seems to be about the money, and I was looking into this last night. Trump just declared the opioid crisis a national emergency. Did you see this?
Uh-oh. No, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, he just made this presidential declaration, you know, and they were urging him to do this, and he said, all right, I'm going to do it, and I don't know if I have any sound.
I'll tell you what I think.
Yeah, here we go. Hold on. Let me just play this.
The opioid crisis is an emergency, and I'm saying officially right now it is an emergency. It's a national emergency. We're going to spend a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of money on the opioid crisis.
But you need emergency powers for drugs.
We're going to draw it up, and we're going to make it a national emergency. It is a serious problem, the likes of which we have never had. You know, when I was growing up, they had the LSD, and they had certain generations of drugs. There's never been anything like what's happened to this country over the last 4 or 5 years. And I have to say this, in all fairness, this is a worldwide problem, not just a United States problem. This is happening worldwide. But this is a national emergency, and we are drawing documents now to so attest.
And so they did. Did you catch what he said?
I'll bet you,
A lot of time, a lot of effort.
It has to do with technology at the border checking shipments, because I've already heard them say that most of these drugs, the opioids, are coming in through the southern border, which is not true. They're actually being mailed, you know, like fentanyl or whatever. They're being mailed in from China. And so they're coming through the mail. But it's another push for the technology at the border crossings.
Well, maybe. I think it's, I don't know, I'm thinking it's a political payback, or perhaps a...
No, it's part of the plan. It's a giveaway. Same thing that was going on during the Bush administration. One hearing that John McCain had, they talked about how the transportation money was changed in conference. You know, bills originate in the House, and then they go to the Senate, mm-hmm. and if there are differences, then they are resolved in conference.
Right, right.
Well, what happened in conference to this one transportation bill is just about all of the money for transportation, some $300 billion, was all transferred to budgets having to do with IT systems on the border.
Hmm.
I have a copy of that. As a matter of fact, I'll give you the link to it. You can include it in the show notes.
Okay, be happy to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking at last night. They were talking about, in fact, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual just modified opioid. They combined two different opioid-related, quote-unquote, mental illnesses into the new DSM-5. So this just opioid abuse is actually considered a mental illness in the DSM. And that's pretty important when you consider psychiatrists treat opioid addiction. To make it a national declaration, releases congressional money to the states. The states have actually followed through making their own states of emergency declarations so that they can receive
emergency, of course.
Yes, yes. So the money can flow from on high into the states, and where does it go? Where does it go? And see, the problem is when you've got these people benefiting from the money, and what they're doing is they're raiding the FEMA funds. The FEMA funds are released in the case of national emergencies. So it's the FEMA funds that they're taking away. You know, the things that, like, if there's an earthquake or a flood, some natural disaster, where FEMA comes in and supposedly tries to help people. I don't know.
No, they're using it.
Supposedly, I said.
Emergencies are for the change agents to come in.
Well, they didn't seem to do a whole lot of good in Alabama, when Northern Alabama, when they had their big tornado rip through and tear the place up. They made an appearance, but
well,
there's
probably
mixed reviews. There's mixed reviews as to how well FEMA did, but and they didn't do so good in New Orleans either. You remember the 2000.
Oh, they spent a ton of money down there, and they. It was all technology. See, that's the thing. You can't really see the technology for the New World Order, and so people think, well, they didn't do anything. Well, they implemented all of the systems.
I'm talking about to help people.
Yeah, no, they don't care about helping people. No, you silly man. It's not about helping people. It's about the technology.
Silly me. Anyway, we got a call on the line, West Virginia. Hello, West Virginia. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is Ken from West Virginia, and you're talking about this opioid thing. And that gave me a thought. Now, we've got a governor here. He's a very, very wealthy man, but he'd been a Democrat, Jim Justice. But there was a big splash about him converting to being a Republican, and Trump was, blah, blah, blah. And I thought the other day, now, wonder what kind of a payoff he got. And now West Virginia is, I think, probably the number one state, or it's way up there as far as being hurt by this opioid thing. And it's quite possible, I mean, it's quite possible that Justice made a deal with Trump to switch parties, and then Trump came out with this, declaring this opioid thing to be a national emergency, in which maybe it might bring funds into West Virginia, where, you know, that just an idea that popped into my head when you were talking about that, because I was just thinking the other day, I wonder what he did, wonder what the deal was, and that's a possibility right there.
Well, we always know that we always have to follow the money, and nothing, yeah. It seems like never is the stated purpose of some action that's being taken the real purpose of the action that's being taken. There's always something under, you know, beneath the scenes that, okay, how can we get this done? Oh, I know. Here's an idea that people will swallow. And it's just, you know, at a time when we have troops in Afghanistan guarding poppy fields, at least we did during the Obama administration. Now, I don't know. I doubt anything has really changed. You know, has anybody heard of us eliminating the crops? No, we can't do that because they'll join the Taliban.
No, I haven't heard anything about Afghanistan in a long time, period.
Well, I did read something this morning that we're going to privatize the military force there so that any failures can be blamed on the private companies.
Uh-huh.
I was reading that this morning. In fact, I think that's up on the website somewhere.
Well, the war over there was fought by privatized military. That was one of the big problems over there was the... there were so many contractors over there and contractors that were contracting with contractors that it was pretty much chaos. Mm-hmm. And that's all part of the devolution of the nation state, elimination of the military, and replacing what should be a soldier function with a contractor, mm-hmm. paramilitary contractor.
Yeah, I'm not finding the article now, but I was reading that just this morning, and it's like they don't want to accept responsibility for the decisions that are being made. So you're right that the war, the actual ground activities, private contractors are always employed there, but at the same time, it's usually directed by somebody from higher up, and I believe the more we're talking about the administrative aspects of this, I'll have to find the article again, but I believe that's being transferred. It's like they don't want to accept responsibility for the problem.
Yeah, there was a lady that wrote a book about the contracting over in the Middle East and during the war of Afghanistan and Iraq, and basically it was a private war. Private contractor war over there.
Wow.
Our military played far less of a role than did the contractors.
Yeah, that's incredible. Kent, do you have anything else?
The guy that wants that is Eric Prince.
Yeah.
The guy with the Blackwater.
Yeah.
He's the one pushing for that. And
Who's related to our Secretary of Education, if I remember right.
Yeah, they're the brother and sister. So I mean, the corruption just—it's even
that amazing?
It's even worse now. Yeah.
Well, and
it's even worse.
You know what?
It's worse.
It just occurred to me recently, and I talked about this civilian military integration. I think that they have rolled military education into our domestic education. I don't mean just education because the military is always sent. Their officers to colleges and whatever. But I mean integrating what is training for soldiers into our domestic education system for a one-size-fits-all. And that was just a revelation I had yesterday, even though years ago I read that what they were... turning our education system into a national resource management system. So these
human. Well, you got to manage those human resources.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. And these people that have designed this system. I mean, they thought of everything, and they basically turned our government into what is a corporate structure with all units of government, everybody under the same governing authority. Mm-hmm. See, that's what it was so disturbing to me when I read about this national resource management system, because it basically turns our government into a corporate power, and all resources, all people, everything is managed by the corporate structure.
Yeah.
Now, we're so low on the totem pole that, of course, we don't see the management structure that is guiding policy towards us. But if you have a single entity that is managing everything, then you're in a nightmare scenario. World of fascism.
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you what, Kent, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. I'm going to move on because I got another call on the line. Nevada, just stay with us for just a moment. We'll get to you right after the break. Stay with us, folks. This is Govern America, Darren Weeks, Vicki Davis, and you. 844-646-8376. Toll free, 844-6-GOVERN. We'll go back to the phones after the break. This is Govern America. Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America, governamerica.com. And from the Skype, we get this message. The opioid crisis is a U.S. government CIA creation, Hegelian dialectic, in continuous operation. And I couldn't agree more. Thanks to that listener for sending that in. Let's go to the phone lines and go out to Nevada and take the phone call. Hello, caller. Who do we have here?
Hi, my name is Jeff from Las Vegas.
Hi there.
President Trump hired Elaine Chao as Secretary of Transportation, and her family and Mitch McConnell's family in the Nation magazine, Mitch McConnell's frightened ties to a shadowy shipping company. They're known drug traffickers. And Trump hired drug traffickers to run the Department of Transportation. So this is being done on purpose. This is to ramp up the drug war. The CIA ships the heroin in from Afghanistan in the coffins of our dead soldiers, and then they put it out on the streets to be sold here all over the United States. That's why the opioid problem has exploded. The CIA has their own dealers that they put out on the streets. Any dealers that don't work for them, they listen to through the illegal wiretapping, and they arrest those people, imprison those people, and keep just the drug dealers that sell the CIA's heroin for them, as well as also the doctors in the medical industry are responsible because they get the people addicted to the opioids through the OxyContin and those types of things. Then when the OxyContin runs out or when they cut them off, they go to the street, and that funds the CIA's black operation, so they continue the cycle over and over again of keeping us in Afghanistan so they can ship the heroin back. Our soldiers are guarding the opium fields. That's what they do.
Yeah.
They're there to guard the opium fields. So this whole thing is one big fraud, one big scam, one big CIA deep state operation. And it has been going back to the 80s, even with Reagan and the Bushes and all that. Reagan just did it with cocaine. Now all the other presidents since then are doing it with heroin. That's the only difference.
Well, yeah, and I agree with you. I hadn't heard that about the smuggling it into the country in the coffins of the dead soldiers, but nothing would surprise me anymore. But it's obvious that this is an industry. It's an underground industry, and anything like that, whenever the government is declaring war on anything, we always know that we get more of it. And
correct.
They've worked. There's a reason for everything. They've worked to get people addicted to these drugs. They removed the law restricting advertising of the pharmaceutical companies on TV, so now they market directly to consumers. Who go talk to and ask your doctor about such and such, you know, while at the same time indemnifying the pharmaceutical companies from harm. And so these opiates, you know, I mean, we've got the legalized drug mechanism with prescription drugs that has caused people to become addicted and be drug seekers. But then at the same time, we have the street drugs coming in as well. This is, I think, a large-scale pacification of the masses.
Because it's destroying our future generation, and there is a war on us. And he's right about Elaine Chao. Her father was a communist Chinese national, and then he was trained as a ship's captain, I think, over in Shanghai, or I'm not sure where, but anyway, he moved to Taiwan and then immigrated over here from Taiwan. But he, as soon as he came over here, he started a shipping company, Foremost Shipping. And I always thought, well, that's Foremost. Really interesting. You know, he basically comes as a, you know, from Taiwan, having been a ship's captain for the communist Chinese, and he's able to start a shipping company here.
Mm-hmm.
And his daughter then, Elaine Chao, she went to work for Citibank, and that would be Walter Wriston. And, of course, Walter Wriston was on the Council of Economic Advisors for Reagan. And so Elaine Chao basically had a red carpet, pun intended, into government. And she's been in government since. She was first involved in the Maritime Commission, and then she a Secretary of Labor, and now she's the Secretary of Transportation. And that was about the same time when they came up with the new transportation system, fully laden with technology, all centered around the idea of the intermodal commerce zone, which just from an analogy point of view, the intermodal commerce zone is an inland port. And so, you know, she was involved in this design of the transportation system with the inland ports, mm-hmm. which is, I wrote a report, you know, a number of years ago about everything that I was researching, and I called it...
Skype is really breaking up bad for some reason.
Hello?
For some reason.
In 2014, they found drugs aboard the ship, the Ping Mei, which is owned by Elaine Chao's father.
Wow.
In Colombia. And they've been finding drugs on many of their ships. It's in the Nation magazine. You can look it up on the internet. The seizure of narcotic shipment in the Caribbean port. That they've been finding drugs. And Mitch McConnell, her husband, he's all involved in making laws that benefit her father's company. I mean, this whole thing is one big giant fraud that's being run. People think Trump is the savior. Trump is hiring these people. Trump is part is the problem. He's not a savior. I just don't understand that people can't see the world for what it really is. If they just take their face out of Facebook and just read some books and read some news, some real news, not mainstream, nothing.
Well, that's the problem. People are reading the news, and the news isn't going to tell you the kinds of stuff we're talking about here.
Right.
Yeah.
The intermodal commerce zones, the inland ports, are the location of the surveillance systems. And they have been incrementally adding legislation to enable the technology. The last one that I looked at was the Safe Port Act. So, yeah. And another thing, too, is that Hutchison Whampoa, which is an arm of the communist Chinese mm-hmm. military, was involved. Actually, they're involved all over the world in implementing these systems at the ports. It's a global system of management.
So we've got people in charge of our transportation system that are involved in wanting to distribute drugs.
Well, yeah, I mean, it serves, sure, it's a war on us. I mean, what do you do? If you're right. going to war, you go after the next generation of military before their military age. You destroy them when they're young, you know?
Man, that's sad. That is
right. Actually, the whole system is a war on America and its people. There's not one thing that you can name, one benefit that they've ever provided for the American people. Not one can, not you can't name one thing.
Right. I agree.
Not one.
I agree. Absolutely.
Not one.
Hey, well, thanks a lot. I appreciate you calling in, and I hope you'll call back. Good to hear from you.
All right. All right. Have a good day, both of you.
Yeah, you too.
Oh, wait.
Oh, wait
a minute.
Hold on.
I wanted to ask if he was following the trial down in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah, I actually was there when I actually was driving by when the thug police and all the law enforcement was there, and they were like lined up alongside the freeway getting off at the Bunkerville exit. It looked like there was going to be a small war going on. I mean, they must have had 500 police vehicles, tanks. I mean, you should have seen what they had there. It looked like they were going to have a war. It was incredible.
Wow.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, I wasn't talking about the 2014 event. I was wondering about the trial that's going on now in Las Vegas.
The thing is, the trial, the judges and the whole system is so corrupt, they'll never get a fair trial. Because even the lawyers are working, they work for the bar, they don't work for the people. So even they're working with the courts as well. They're working against the families and stuff. I mean, I know a lot about Vegas and Nevada, and the system is so corrupt. It almost makes Chicago look good. I mean, it's the whole country, every institution of America has been corrupted and destroyed. They're just trying to bring this whole country down, all of it. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, I agree with you, too. Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call.
Yeah.
God bless
you,
sir.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, I'll talk to you again. All thanks. Right.
Yep.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right, there he is. In fact, I don't think I caught his name. But
Jeff.
Jeff, okay, very good. Jeff in Nevada.
Uh-huh.
All right,
yeah,
well.
Yeah, the last thing that happened on Friday was that one of the defendants, Eric Parker, and Eric is from Idaho. He's the one that is famous for the picture of him on the bridge, you know, looking through a crack.
Right, I remember
that. Which you don't really get a wide range through a crack.
No.
You know, but he was trying to testify in his defense, but the judge will not allow him to testify on anything except the moments of the event itself. Nothing about why he came there, nothing about anything that he saw outside of his immediate location on the bridge. So basically she's not allowing him to testify to defend himself at all.
Yeah, the whole thing is just illustrates once again, as we talk about a lot here on this program, about the kangaroo court system that we have here in America. In America.
America,
yeah. It's a joke, and it's not a very funny joke either. I mean, these people are being railroaded into prison, and
yes.
It's a miracle, with the deck stacked against them the way that it was out in Oregon, that, you know, Bundy and Shauna Cox and some of the others got off, you know, and of course, you know, they weren't allowed to go. The Bundys weren't in any way. But,
the government couldn't prove conspiracy. I mean, it wasn't a conspiracy.
They're doing all they can to rig everything so that these people go to prison.
Yes, they want to send them. Like that one guy, they sent him to prison for 68 years.
Yeah, it's insane. But see, this is about making an example of people.
Yes, it is. It's an intimidation of the population.
Yeah.
Don't you dare ever say a word about what the government is doing, or we'll throw you in jail for the rest of your life.
Well, don't you dare ever defend your property with force of arms.
Yes.
Trespass, which is all they were doing, trespassing You know, even if you accept the legitimacy of federal property and biosphere reserves and, you know, whatever that Malheur thing was called, if you accept the legitimacy, the worst you could come up with is they were trespassing.
And, yes.
And you had a bunch of hippies do the same thing just not too long ago, and, hey, they're fine. They were never even arrested. Mm-hmm. We talked about that on the show here. So this is about making an example of people, making sure that nobody ever challenges the authoritarian government that we have, and it is authoritarian.
Yeah, well, that's what the judge basically said. You are never, never allowed to defend yourself against the government.
When the judge will not allow the Constitution in her courtroom, what does that tell people? You know, if you have a copy of the Constitution, you have to have it turned face down. That was the rule, according to the witnesses that were there.
Yeah. Well, I think she went too far on Friday, because apparently even the jurors were wondering what in the world. Somebody wrote an article saying that the jurors' mouths dropped open when she ordered Eric Parker off the witness stand. They're going like, what in the world is going on here? And so I think she may have gone too far.
But who's going to hold her accountable?
Blew her cover as a judge, as an unbiased judge.
Well, I don't think she cares. I don't think any of them care.
Yeah, but the jury is the one that makes the decision.
Well, that's true.
They have to care about. They don't care about the defendants. I mean, you know, they want to lock them up. They'll lock them up. But they do have to care about the jury, because the jury is the one that makes the decision. And if they try to override the decision of the jury, then it's the tyranny is totally out in the open at that point.
Yeah. Well, that's true. And I think that played, according to the one juror, I think it was just one that actually talked after the Oregon trial. This person said that made a big difference, too, in swaying the jury. They saw how the whole process was being rigged against these people.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it's even worse than the Las Vegas trial. Mm. The judge apparently is worried about jury nullification, and that reminds me. I was watching, I don't know if you know who Chris Ann Hall is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, she was on C-SPAN this morning on, I forget what the name of the program is, but you can find it on the internet and watch it again. And it's one of those in-depth programs that they did. And so she talked about not only the books she's written, but about the classes that she teaches and about the Constitution.
Yeah, in fact, I think that presentation that you're referring to, we have that running on our regular Govern America Radio rotation when we're not on the air here.
This is a new one, I thought.
Oh, it's a new one?
I thought this is just a new interview with her.
Oh, okay.
You know, for her to talk to the C-SPAN audience.
I see,
about
okay.
What she
I'm
what
glad
she
she's
does.
Finally getting some exposure, because people really do need to understand the lost history, the history that's been buried, and the real purpose, the real meaning of the U.S. Constitution as intended by the Founding Fathers.
Mm-hmm.
She's really good at understanding that and relaying that, communicating that to her audiences everywhere. She's got her own show, by the way. I don't know if people know. ChrisAnnHall.com, I think, is where her website, Chris Ann Hall. It's called The Chris Ann Hall Show. You can put it into a search engine, and she does a great job. So,
well, I would really recommend people find that on cspan.org, is the c-span.org, and
maybe we can find
that.
It and put
it's
it
very,
in
very interesting.
The link in the show notes. Okay. Another thing that people have called my attention to, which I think it very much needs to be pointed out, this draconian legislation that's pending in Congress right now, the Israel Anti-Boycott Act. I meant to talk about this last week. And You know, we ran out of time, so many things going on. But this is, in the Senate, it's S-720, and there's also an H.R. 1697. It's the Israel Anti-Boycott Act. This thing is, it describes itself. The bill declares that Congress opposes the United Nations Human Rights Council resolution of March 24, 2016, which urges countries to pressure companies to divest from or break contracts with Israel, and two, encourages full implementation of the United States-Israel Strategic Partnership Act of 2014 through enhanced government-wide coordinated U.S.-Israel scientific and technological cooperation in civilian areas. The bill amends the Export Administration Act of 1979 to declare that it shall be U.S. policy to oppose requests by foreign countries to impose restrictive practices or boycotts against other countries friendly to the United States or against U.S. persons, and restrictive trade practices or boycotts fostered or imposed by an international governmental organization or requests to impose such practices or boycotts against Israel. This is a American-Israel Political Action Committee measures. Lobbying at work here, because it says the bill prohibits any U.S. person engaged interstate or foreign commerce from supporting any request by a foreign country to impose any boycott against a country that is friendly to the United States and that is not itself the object of any form of boycott pursuant to United States law or regulation, or any boycott fostered or imposed by any international governmental organization against Israel, or any request by any international governmental organization to impose such a boycott. It amends the Export-Import Bank Act of 1945 to include as a reason for the Export-Import Bank to deny credit applications for any export of goods and services between the United States and foreign countries, opposition to policies and actions that are politically motivated and are intended to penalize or otherwise limit commercial relations or specifically with citizens or residents of Israel, entities organized under the laws of Israel or the government of Israel. What the ACLU, which granted, I'm no fan of the ACLU, don't get me wrong. But, you know, it's a case of the stop clock being twice a day, if I can spit it out here. They sent a letter to the Senate opposing this legislation. They say, we write today in opposition to S-720, also known as the Israel Anti-Boycott Act. We understand that proponents of the bill are seeking additional co-sponsors. We urge you to refrain from co-sponsoring the legislation because it would punish individuals for no reason other than their political beliefs. We also urge you to oppose the bill, whether in committee or on the floor, unless it has undergone significant revision to resolve its constitutional infirmities. The bill seeks to expand the Export Administration Act of 1979 and the Export-Import Bank Act of 1945, which, among other things, prohibit U.S. persons from complying with a foreign government's request to boycott a country friendly to the U.S. The bill would amend those laws to bar U.S. persons from supporting boycotts against Israel. Basically, modifying, you know, getting in the way of your free speech. It is a First Amendment issue. My words, not theirs. But that is, I think, what they're saying here, including its settlements in the Palestinian-occupied territories conducted by international governmental organizations such as the United Nations and the European Union. It would also broaden the law to include penalties for simply requesting information about such boycotts. Violations would be subject to a minimum civil penalty of $250,000 and a maximum criminal penalty of $1 million and 20 years in prison. Just for supporting a boycott.
Well, it's very interesting. They didn't care when it happened to South Africa, when our government took part in the boycott of South Africa because of their apartheid laws.
Yeah,
and that's not a defense of the apartheid laws, but the use of economic power. They use it as a weapon.
Right. And they're doing that with North Korea, of course. But see, here's the thing. This is talking about private individuals. violations would be subject to a minimum civil penalty of $250,000 and a maximum of $1 million and 20 years in prison. We take no position for or against the effort to boycott Israel for any foreign country, or any foreign country, for that matter. However, we do assert that the government cannot, consistent with the First Amendment, punish U.S. persons based solely on their expressed political beliefs. The bill would impose civil and criminal punishment on individuals solely because of their political beliefs about Israel and its policies. There are millions of businesses and individuals who do business with Israel or with companies doing business there for a number of reasons. Some, like those who would face serious financial penalties and jail time under the bill, actively avoid purchasing goods or services from companies that do business in Israel and the Palestinian occupied territories because of a political viewpoint opposed to Israeli policy. Others may refrain from Israeli-related businesses, a business based on political beliefs, but choose not to publicly announce their reasoning. Still others do no business with companies in Israel for purely pragmatic reasons. Under the bill, however, only a person whose lack of business ties to Israel is politically motivated would be subject to fines and imprisonment, even though there are many others who engage in the very same behavior. In short, the bill would punish businesses and individuals based solely on their point of view. Such a penalty is in direct violation of the First Amendment.
Yeah, now, that doesn't sound good, does it?
No, that's, you know, and the thing is I first came, somebody sent me this, you know, probably a month ago, either that or I stumbled across it. I can't remember now. And I didn't talk about it sooner because I thought, this is so draconian. There's no way it's ever going to get passed. But in this day and age,
I don't think we can make those assumptions anymore.
That's where I was just getting ready to go. Anymore, you just never know. And, man, it's astounding to me. These assaults and the power of the AIPAC in Congress to get something like this introduced. It is unbelievable. But see, all those God-fearing, God-loving Christians that go to church every day, you know, they saddle up the mule and go to church every week. And they're diehard Israel supporters. And that's the only reason why this would ever get any steam, I think. So I just thought I would point that out. Go ahead.
I whenever I think about the Jews, then I think about the Nazis, and I think about George Soros, and why is George Soros still able to do what he's doing, and the Jews don't really kind of, they don't bother with George Soros.
Isn't that
interesting?
Isn't that amazing? And neither does Trump.
Yeah.
Trump is a big time. And I'll tell you what, if this gets to Trump's desk, I promise you, he'll sign it. I guarantee you he will sign it. All right. Another thing, a federal judge has just ordered, and this came out about a month ago now. Amazing how fast the time goes. But a federal judge just ordered the State Department to search for Clinton's Benghazi emails. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here we go again. You know, these are things, little tricks that they pull to try to convince you that there really is something going on in terms of real investigations. If anybody thinks this woman's going
to prison,
yeah, if anybody really thinks this woman's going to prison, you're out of your mind. You're absolutely out of your mind if you think there's any real, so it's just, all this is going to be is more wasted money. That's the bottom line. A U.S. District Court Judge Amit Mehta ruled Tuesday that the State Department did not do enough to track down messages Clinton may have sent about the assault on the U.S. diplomatic compound on September 11, 2012, an attack that killed, four Americans, including the U.S. Ambassador to Libya, Politico reported. And, you know, in response, they say, in response to Freedom of Information Act requests, state searched the roughly 30,000 messages that Clinton turned over to her former agency at its request to December 2014 after officials searching for Benghazi-related records realized she had used personal email accounts during her four-year tenure as secretary. State later searched tens of thousands of emails handed over to the agency by three former top aides to Clinton's, Uma Abedin, Cheryl Mills, and Jake Sullivan. Finally, state searched a collection of emails the FBI assembled when it was investigating, and I'll put that word in quotes, investigating, Clinton's use of the private account and server. In all, state found 348 Benghazi-related messages or documents that were sent to or from Clinton in a period of nearly 5 months after the attack. So, here we go with the State Department ordering to search for these missing emails. You know, they didn't search hard enough, so they're going to search again. And the question we all should ask is, what's the point? What's the point? Because we know by now the evidence has been destroyed. So here they are promoting all of this, and nothing's going to be found. It's just all a big dog and pony show.
Well, I agree with you. I think it's a show, you know, new sheriff in town, and now he's going to start doing things, and, you know, the new judge and a new ruling and go look again. And I agree. It's all for show.
Yeah.
What Hillary was engaged in over there is the policy of the U.S. government. It is the economic, or I don't know if it's the U.S. government, it is the global policy. They were over in Libya doing the whole economic game plan. There was a company called, the guy's name is Michael Porter. He's was a Harvard professor. He's the one that did the cluster studies, which is the study of the economy, and comes up with the economic development plan for where you should, where a town should focus their money, you know, for economic development, you know, advising on things like tourism, like for North Korea, and Chris Stevens, the guy who was murdered over there, mm-hmm. He was there actually to meet with a hospital official because they were talking about bringing in the new technology for the hospital. And they were working with Massachusetts General. And guess whose daughter was working for Massachusetts General? John Kerry, his daughter.
what a tangled web we weave, huh?
Yeah, and any country, you can pick a country. You know, I have the economic development plan for Pakistan. It's the same plan. It is one plan that they just customize for a local area, but it's the same plan. I've got the same plan for Ireland. I mean, it boggles my mind, you know, that all this is going on and people aren't seeing it.
And we come back to North Korea. I mean, do you think that there's a plan for North Korea?
Ski resort. That's tourism. That's under the category of tourism in the economic development plan.
Yeah. So, I mean, hey, you know, in order to have the ski resort, we got to have... There we go. Okay. So, anyway. Enough war sounds. I can do war sounds for, you know, I got that on tap.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, hey, but that's not what, you know, that's not far from what the president's saying. What in the world is going on? That's weird. Okay, let's do this.
Starting North by Korea, itself, huh?
Best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The likes of which the world has never seen before. Now, when I heard him say that, you know, aside from the obvious constitutional problems of the statement, excuse me, Trump, it's not your place to go bomb foreign countries without a congressional authorization for use of military force, which, by the way, the Aspen Institute was talking about the need for a new authorization for use of military force that would be a lot more broad and allow the public, the president, to be more flexible in use of military force. This is something that look for this to happen in the days ahead, pretty much a blanket AUMF for the president. But, this is the idea that's being floated around in some of these think tank circles now. But he completely painted himself into a corner, because I don't think Kim Jong-un is going to stop. I think, as we talked about
how
before,
how else can he get his country rebuilt, you know, his infrastructure rebuilt? You know what? A long time ago, I watched a presentation of Thomas P.M. Barnett. He was a defense analyst. He was teaching at Newport, and then 9/11 happened, and, you know, he was appointed to the Office of Force Transformation, I think it was, within the Pentagon. That the presentation he had turned out to be the most important thing that I ever read in terms of getting me started understanding what the plans were for our country. But at one point in that presentation, he talks about these third world countries, and they noticed, or somebody noticed, that when they do something bad, we come bomb them, and then we rebuild their country.
Yeah.
And so it became kind of like, you know, they're saying, hey, I'm bad over here, you know, bomb me over here, so, you know, they get their country rebuilt.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't recommend that program enough. I'll give you the link for it. It was in 2004. And over all this time that I have been researching, I mean, I understood what he was saying at the time, but I didn't really, really understand. But as time has gone on, everything that he said back then has come to be where we are today.
So it's just so sad. It's just really sad, you know, because you want to believe that your elected officials and people that you have running government have the best interest of the people in mind. And I think generally people still, the average, you know, American would still naively believe that, yeah, government's screwed up, but they're trying. They're trying to run things. It's just bureaucracy. It's you know, red tape, it's, you know, they can't get along, and it's all this stuff. No, the chaos exists because they want the chaos.
Yes.
The destruction exists because they want it to exist.
They do not work for the people of this country.
No.
The people of this country are secondary. We're kind of like,
we're
the
not even on the
hands.
Radar, man. I mean,
yeah, no. we're not. They use us. But they don't care about us. They don't care about our country.
We are human resources. That's all we are. Chattel.
Chattel.
Little slaves on the plantation. That's all we... That's, you know, all they care about is sucking. Like the leeches that they are, they suck until they kill the host.
They've just about done that.
This is what you mean by a resource, isn't it? I mean, isn't that what a resource really is? You use it. You use it until it's gone.
Well, yeah, and that's the way they use it up, throw it away. And this country is no longer useful. They have the technology that they can control the world with as a corporate, global corporate governing system, so they really don't need us anymore. And that's why that's you know why our country is falling apart. It's because they're just about done with us. They don't need us anymore.
Yeah, and Kim Jong-un, I think he's going to continue because he's got to continue. If he gives up nuclear weapons, which is what they're going to call for, it's going to be death to his regime. So he knows this. I mean, he's not stupid. I don't think he's, and I don't think he's crazy. And when he does, see, the problem with Trump making a statement like this is he's painted himself, as I said, into a corner. He's skipped all diplomatic possibilities, diplomatic channels. So now he's saying fire and fury like the world has never seen before. Okay, what does that entail? I mean, if he doesn't follow through, then he's not a man of his word. If Kim Jong-un continues to promote or provoke and pursue his nuclear weapons and his ICBMs, then where is that going to leave the president and his advisors and the Congress, if they're consulted, if he doesn't act alone against the Constitution, which he already has before, so I can't see any reason why he wouldn't again. But the point is that this creates a scenario where everything is, he's just stripped, he skipped all these steps, and he's moving straight to the nuclear apocalypse. And it, frankly, it plays right into the hands of his opponents who argued during the campaign that he lacked the temperament to be president. Here's Judge Andrew Napolitano.
I wouldn't challenge him. I wouldn't feed his fury. I would starve him out. Mm-hmm. Now, look, I'm your legal and constitutional guy, not your military guy, so I might not be the right person to be asking this, but I happen to be sitting here with you waiting to come on and discuss Loretta Lynch, and now this comes out. But I was startled at the president's language. Sometimes the president gets his message across with exaggeration. Everybody knows that. He must be exaggerating, because if he literally means what he says, then he's talking about using nuclear weapons, and there'd be no place for that. There'd be no indication for it, and it would be horrific to our allies in the area, particularly South Korea.
Judge, isn't this a war of words in that, you know, you got North Korea out there saying a whole bunch of stuff. You've got not just the president, but deputies of the president, Dr. Gorka, for example, yesterday, and Nikki Haley even, making some media rounds, trying to indicate to North Korea, this is serious, and we mean business.
Right, and the way you do that is through diplomatic channels and through what Ambassador Haley did at the UN. I wouldn't fight fire with fire. And though I respect the president and respect his judgment, the language was so over the top that it will encourage this crazy nut in North Korea rather than deter him.
Well, Kellyanne Conway said his comments, and this is what we were referencing earlier, were both strong and obvious. It is kind of obvious, right?
But they can't be literally accurate, because if we are going to use greater force and power than the world has ever seen, he means greater than Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and it can't possibly mean that. He's not going to kill innocent North Koreans. It's one thing to take out their military capability. It's another thing to take out Kim Jong-il. It's quite a third thing to take out the innocent people
Let's go through our options right now. And again, you're not a military guy, but you've obviously spent a lot of time thinking about this. What are we looking at? In other words, you can go in from a military perspective and actually strike.
Well, the president has intelligence, which you and I don't. And intelligence, meaning CIA, intelligence assets, can tell him how serious this guy is, how close he is to making a decision like this, the capability of his weaponry. I mean, is this just stuff that goes up in the air and goes down into the ocean, or can it really hit Alaska or Los Angeles? So intelligence is presumably advising the president of that, and he wisely is not sharing that with the public. These are military secrets, and they are legitimate, lawful secrets. Mm-hmm. But I don't know why he would try and provoke this guy unless, as Barry Goldwater once said, I would pray for provocation so that I could wipe the enemy out.
Ooh. What do you think of that?
Wow. Well, you know, they did come up with some kind of a new bomb I read about, years ago. It was like a neutron bomb or something, where it takes the people out, but it keeps the buildings and stuff. Maybe they want to test that, you know.
Yeah, good
Do
question.
I sound rather cavalier? Yeah.
Well, they're rather cavalier about human life. Now, over at the State Department, Heather Nauert, the new spokesperson there, was bombarded with questions, of course, about the statement, to the point where she started to become a little testy, because Rex Tillerson had just said that our message to North Korea is that we're not your enemy. And then Trump turns around and says, hey, fire and fury is going to rain down on you. So which is it?
As people look at this and some consider comments to have been alarming, I would have to go back to this. Let's consider what is alarming. What is alarming? Two ICBM tests in less than a month, two nuclear tests that took place last year. As a matter of fact, when there's an earthquake in China, I get many emails and calls from all of you asking, was it another nuclear test? That is how big of a deal this is, what is going on. Let me finish. Okay, please. It is a big deal what is going on. It is a concern to the world, not just the United States. Those are alarming actions. They are provocative actions on the part of North Korea.
My question is, given those provocations from North Korea, which has been belligerent in the extreme, granted, stipulated, is it helpful or unhelpful for the president to use the kind of language that we have seen previously coming from Kim Jong-un, not from presidents of the United States? Is he exacerbating
the president
problem?
Spoke to him, to Kim Jong-un, in a language that Secretary Tillerson has said, and said this morning, in the kind of language that Kim Jong-un will understand. We would like to see results. The pressure campaign, we see that working. The international community is in agreement with the United States and many of our partners and allies on putting additional pressure on North Korea. The secretary happens to be coming back from the ASEAN conference, where they had tremendous success. It was a good week for diplomacy. I know you all want to obsess over statements and all of that and try to want to make a lot of noise out of that, but what is important to keep in mind is that this diplomatic pressure at ASEAN, at the meeting of the 10 Asian nations along with the United States, came to a joint agreement and a joint statement and put out a very strong condemnation of North Korea. We are all singing from the same hymn book.
Okay, so she said that they were obsessing over it, which really got up the dander of the Associated Press's Matt Lee.
With your choice of the word obsess. I mean, we're not obsessing about this. This is the President of the United States threatening a nuclear-armed country, whether you want to accept it or not, a country that is armed with nuclear weapons, with fire and fury, the likes of which the world has never seen. I don't think that it's obsessing to want to know what to have a further clarification of exactly what that means and whether or not it means that you're preparing to send fire and fury raining down on the North Korean regime.
And I'll let the president's statement stand for itself.
Okay. But I mean, it's not obsessing to want to know more.
You know what? I see a packed room of journalists here, and normally there aren't half as many as there are here today.
Yeah, which means what exactly?
There's a lot of interest.
I don't see how that has anything to do with it, though. But yeah. this idea, you can't ask any questions. You're not allowed to ask any questions. Just accept the war, slave. Shut up, slave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard speculation that the message really was for China, not North Korea, which is even more scary to think about than if it was for North
China
Korea.
Well, China doesn't want a big nuclear or any other kind of war destabilization along its border. And that's the problem.
Well, and that's what happens when they start this economic development. And that's why the whole Middle East is in chaos, you know, because they destroy everything. I mean, it's like termites come in and just, you know, totally destroy a structure, and you don't realize it until it just all collapses. And that's kind of what they've been doing to various countries around the world.
Yeah, I agree with you. Termites, that's a good analogy. A couple of weeks ago on this broadcast, Vicki, you said you wanted all your money back for the missile defense research, because why would they be hyping the threat of a nuclear North Korea delivering nukes to the U.S. mainland on ICBMs if we had technology to shoot them down? And I, you know, I, if you recall, my reply was, because they're lying. They don't have the technology. Well, obviously they claim to have the technology. I wasn't denying that they don't claim to have it. But, you know, they've spent billions and billions of dollars on the development of the program. And it's interesting that we had a new development here Tuesday of this week. We began to find out that our suspicions about the program were not too far off. To put it diplomatically, Fox News actually had Admiral Robert Nader on to reassure the country that North Korea is not a problem. Hey, it's handled. We can just shoot down the ICBMs right out of the sky, right?
We're going to turn now to Admiral Robert Nader. He is joining me now. He is a retired U.S. Navy four-star admiral and a former 7th Fleet commander. And let me ask you first off, can we defend against this weapon?
We have, I would say, limited defense capabilities against this weapon.
What? Wait a minute. Hold on. You're supposed to be reassuring us.
Depending on how it is delivered. I certainly agree with Senator DeMint that we need to invest heavily and quickly in upgrading our capabilities with missile defense. We have gone too slowly in that regard, and the sequestration bounds that have been existent for the last four or so years have got to be lifted. The Congress has got to get responsible in this regard, and there's got to be significant investment in missile defense. Having said that, we will never have 100% reliability.
Never have 100%
missile down once it's fired. There will always be that threat, and this is a very, very serious situation that we find ourselves in now.
Well, it'll never be 100%, Vicki.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now...
I
go ahead.
I don't know how they can say these things, because, yeah, if you fire one anti-missile missile, you might miss.
Mm-hmm.
But... if you have a battery of missiles, you're bound to hit something on a missile that is headed toward the United States. And really, you know, you just kind of have to keep shooting till you get it, right?
Yeah. Well, still reeling from the interview, the following day they had Stephen Bucci on. Now, he served as the U.S. Army Special Forces and was former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Homeland Defense, a military assistant to Donald Rumsfeld, and he was responsible for overseeing the policy for air, land, maritime, and cyber domains. Now, this seems to be the guy that you would want to ask to debunk all of those those crazy admirals who talk about the missile defense system not being too secure and efficient.
Well, we're actually more ready than we've ever been before.
So far, so good, right? More ready than we ever been before.
Particularly for an opponent like North Korea, who has a limited number of missiles. We really couldn't do much against Russia or China, who have hundreds and hundreds of them. But in this case, we're better than average at doing it.
Better than average, Vicki.
Okay. Well,
is it perfect? No.
Progress.
Do we need more of it? Absolutely. Particularly in places like Hawaii, that's kind of the most likely target for somebody like Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
But we're just not as good as we could be.
Okay, that's not reassuring at all. I mean, I don't want to be prepared on a relative basis. We want to be prepared for an attack on an absolute basis. What needs to be done, and how much danger is there really? I mean, to say that we're better than average, that's not great.
I wonder how many billions, just to pause it for just a minute, how many billions have we spent on this program over the decades?
I can't even imagine, because they started this stuff when I was
it was started back in the 80s.
School.
I remember them talking about it in the 80s.
Well, I remember them talking about it in the 60s.
Oh, okay.
That's what the whole space program was.
All right. See, there you go. So after billions and billions of dollars, at least tens of billions, the number 60 billion comes to my mind for some reason.
But you have to really get Carl Sagan to say that billions and billions. Nobody says it like Carl Sagan.
But the point is that they've spent a gob and a bunch of money on this, and this is what we have to show. We're better than half, a little better than average.
Yeah, what's average in terms of, I mean, you know, what countries have a missile shooting program? You know, so where do they come up with the countries for the average?
Well, and keep in mind, we had the admiral, the good admiral, on the clip there before this guy, and Admiral Robert Natter, and he was talking about all the needs to spend even more. You know, it's not enough. We need to ramp up the spending. We need to go whole hog. You know.
Your defense budget this time, $600 billion or something?
We spend more money on our, something like that. We spend more money on our defense budget than any other country in the world. All of the countries in the world combined, I believe.
Right. And if I'm right about the civilian-military integration, they have, the Pentagon has actually moved in to usurp the domestic budget. So they're really kind of double dipping.
Well, what they're doing, yes, they're stealing the money is what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And that's the problem. They've been stealing from the American people this money for all these decades. And now here's this quote unquote real threat. And,
we're only average.
We're not prepared. Yeah, we're a little better than average. Unbelievable. And the people don't get outraged? They're not paying attention. That's the problem. Tell you what, we're going to take the bottom of the hour break, and we'll continue here and go forward with the final half hour straight ahead. Stay with us, folks. Govern America continues. Please don't go away. This is Govern America, final stretch. We're in the home stretch of the broadcast here. We've been playing audio from Stephen Bucci, who served as the U.S. Army Special Forces and was former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Homeland Defense and a military assistant to Donald Rumsfeld, on the subject of what is the effectiveness or the lack thereof of the U.S. missile defense system in light of this fact that North Korea is supposed to be this big threat to the United States, and we've spent these billions and billions of dollars over the decades on a missile defense system. What do we have to show for our money?
A lot of people will quote you numbers. Well,
trillions. Go ahead. You did some digging?
Oh, no, I just said trillions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly. And especially when you consider the fact that when they started this whole thing, the money was actually worth more. I mean, we had inflation take root to devalue the money supply. And so what is a billion today? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And you're right.
A lot of people will quote you numbers. Well, you know, that we only hit about 50% of the ones we test. It's actually more like 60 to 65.
Oh, well, that's much better.
And to be honest with you,
considering also that it only takes one to destroy whatever they're hitting.
Remember, we only test the stuff that we don't have set yet. The really good stuff, we don't have to test anymore. But in the case of Hawaii in particular, we need to deploy already existing technologies, the Aegis Ashore system, it's the same missile system that's on our warships with its associated radars, the THAAD system, the one that we have put into North Korea, or into South Korea and into Eastern Europe. We test them there in Hawaii, but we don't have any deployed. So we really have the Americans who are closest to the threat and therefore the most likely target who don't have the capability to protect themselves. We need to get that deployed, and we could do that in weeks or months because it's already existing technology.
Why is it not currently deployed? Just because we didn't think that there was a threat that could reach Hawaii?
Some of it is they have a plan to deploy a much more advanced technology that's about 6 to 8 years away. There's always a balance with defense spending like that. But in this case, given the newest information on North Korea, it's really imperative that we deploy that existing technology as soon as possible, if not today, mm-hmm. to protect those American citizens.
I've read different articles about, you know, people from Lockheed Martin being quoted as saying there's a scramble that's going on around the world right now of people trying to collect defense weapons. Do you think that's true? And who would that be? Is that Japan?
And defense stocks.
And is that who else is trying to get prepared for this?
Well, our allies are, and we're helping some of them. We've helped South Korea. We're helping Japan, who has a lot of its own capability. We're helping our allies in Eastern Europe. Remember, because it's North Korea, it's also Iran that we're worried about. There's a lot of concern about ballistic missile threats, and people are trying to find a way to defend their territory and their civilians. And so, there's not enough of it out there. We produce most of it, and we ought to be deploying it to protect our citizens.
We don't even have it deployed. Don't even have what we have deployed.
So we have theoretical defense.
Yeah, well, you know, and 60 to 65%, what could possibly go wrong with this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I know they
good
have
enough.
Military people running around with their little cell phones that can order up defense stuff. And so, you know, they ought to just order up some anti-missile defense.
Yeah, can you just whip us up a batch?
Yeah.
Kind of like ordering a pizza.
Send us a few of those.
Yeah, 30 minutes or less.
That's global sourcing, you know, global sourcing.
So I want to go back to the Robert Natter interview for just a moment, because he goes on to describe what he thinks needs to be done. And I really don't like the sound of this.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying is a lot more dire than I think a lot of us have heard before this. So you're saying we have limited capability at this point to shoot it down? Do you believe, as they are boasting, that it could reach the American mainland?
Again, it depends on the delivery. If it's fired from North Korea and is an intercontinental ballistic missile, mm-hmm. we have some good capability. It's all about kinematics. And the areas where we do have capability against such a missile.
Okay, what'd you say?
I said maybe that's Trump's strategy. If he can hit California, it's...
Yeah.
That's not very nice.
Well, they're going to keep playing around until somebody really gets hurt.
Yeah, what would be some of the other options if you're talking about if they weren't firing it from the mainland? That's how you started that. What are other scenarios that we would be on the lookout for?
There is no doubt that the best defense is to take them out before they're fired. That is by far the most reliable defense that we can have for our country. Having said that, I do believe that we've got to continue to work harder with China, get China involved, as Senator Clement said, and try and bring the North Korean regime down to either sanity or to get them out of there.
How do you do that? How do you take out those weapons before they're fired?
Well, you've got to fire them before they are fired themselves. We have intelligence on the location of many of them. I don't want to pretend that...
many of them.
We're considering for Venezuela.
Did you catch that? Many of them. We got the locations for many of them.
You should be talking about what number that
is. Let me play that again here. Let's back it up.
I don't want to pretend that we should be talking.
Hold on, let's do this.
Well, you've got to fire them before they fired themselves. We have intelligence on the location of many of them. I don't want to pretend that we should be talking about what number that is, but we do have surveillance systems and we do have intelligence systems that would give us a good indication where these things are located.
How reliable do you think that is?
Well, it's not 100% by any stretch. But if you can shoot the...
Don't you just love this? That's not 100%. But hey, you know...
Never mind that.
What's one or two nukes?
Never mind that they can read the face of a coin in a Walmart parking lot.
Yeah,
from
or your
space,
your license plate on your car.
Don't know that they can find all those missiles.
Well, you know, what's one or two nukes? Hey, you know, collateral damage. You know, your family will be burned alive, and whole areas, maybe the whole country will be uninhabitable for many years to come. But you know what? It's collateral damage.
Destroy these missiles before they're fired. You have a much better chance of then taking on any that you miss.
Yeah. Do you, or, I mean, just obviously I'm not a military person, but just playing out the logical scenario, if you were able to take out all of them but two or one, wouldn't they immediately fire that last one?
Oh, I think they would.
Sure.
But we would certainly be prepared to intercept them. And we would
with our 60% effective defense system
have that capability both in the initial trajectory and also in the down turn in the trajectory.
And what do you think is, I mean, other possibilities that people have raised is, you know, trying to topple the regime, whether that means squeezing them or, you know, financially, or is there a military option to toppling the regime? Is that harder, easier, more dangerous than the other options we've talked about?
Well, I'd say it's equally dangerous. Again, those steps would be much more readily achievable if we China. We can't forget that.
Okay, that's their Skype breakup.
The nuclear holocaust in the Korean Peninsula is going to affect China in a big way. So they have a vested interest in making sure that this doesn't happen as well. So I would suggest that the discussions with China are going to get much more reasonable and I would hope productive.
Okay, do you see how insane these people are to be promoting these ideas?
Yeah, but what he said confirms what I said that another analyst was saying, which was the message really was for China, not for North Korea. And, you know, to get China to step up and do something with North Korea. But I'm not sure that that's totally the case. I think that...
So the analyst doesn't think that they're really considering a preemptive strike on North Korea's nuclear facilities.
I think they're using North Korea to leverage China. And there's a lot of problems with China and with our trade deficit with China. China's been waging economic war on us,
that's true.
And granted, it was an invited war. The brilliance.
Well, we gave them all the tools they need to defeat us.
Absolutely, gave them all the tools of economic warfare to use against our country.
Yeah, and where's the gallows for the people that did that? You know, I was thinking about this the other day. As dark as this may sound. You know, we have a lot of skilled laborers in this country that are unemployed. It seems to me like we could put these folks back to work for many, many years to come, building all the gallows that we need to hang the people who have betrayed us from within.
I don't think we'd be able to complete that in the my lifetime.
Well, we may have to chop down a lot of forests, too.
Yeah,
we probably wipe out the entire national forest building these things. There's a
I think it'd be a good use of resources.
After a fair trial, of course. After a fair trial.
Like the guys are getting
like
in.
Like the Bundys. Like the Bundys are getting.
Maybe we could have Judge Navarro be the, at least set the rules, not to be the judge, because we know she'd let him go, but.
I could say something about this, but I don't want to get in trouble. Anyway, moving along. As we just heard, Robert Nader is promoting the idea of a preemptive strike. So then just yesterday, would this preemptive strike work? Yesterday, they had a former SEAL, David Pierce, on. Now, he was talking about this strategy of a preemptive strike on North Korea's nuclear facility, and he gave his opinion about it.
If they begin to launch or they launch towards Guam, we need to respond in such a way that they don't have the capability to come back and hit Seoul or launch more nuclear weapons. So that leads to utter devastation on our end, on their end, from us.
You don't think that there needs to be a preventative strike? I mean, you're talking about them launching a missile first, as opposed to, some advocate going in and wiping out the weapons they have, or at least trying to do that in some way before they build up a larger arsenal.
I don't think that that's within the realm of possible at this point. As you look at the mobility of their weapons, how deep they are underground, I do not think that there's enough confidence level that you would get everything, be able to stop that, and them not be able to launch an attack. So I don't think that that's a good possibility.
There you go.
Uh-huh.
So it won't work. I mean, common sense would dictate that it's very dangerous. It's a dangerous strategy. And yet you got these military officials going up there very candidly, I think, advocating something that would in effect be, I think, suicide. They can't possibly. I think you've nailed it with your analysts' discussion about this being a bluff for China to get busy and work on this problem.
Yeah.
Because they can't possibly, I mean, unless they really are insane, which, is entirely possible, they can't possibly be seriously considering doing this.
I don't, it may be that China, they kept strong men in charge in the Middle East for a long time because apparently, as we've seen, those people over there needed a strong man leader because they're just nuts. And it may be that China has been real happy with the authoritarian leadership in North Korea for the same reason.
Yeah.
And so they don't really want to disrupt the...
What I've heard over and over again from different analysts is the same thing. The last thing China wants is instability. They want the status quo. And any change in the guard in North Korea, even though Kim Jong-un, the young'un, might be a little bit flaky here and there and make a lot of threats, make a lot of noise. There is an old saying in South Korea that when North Korea roars, South Korea yawns. That's what the statement that I heard before about this whole thing when Kim Jong-un is making his, we're going to bomb South Korea. Mm-hmm. They pretty much ignore him and ignored his father because they figure this is just how he talks. This is just, he's the Donald Trump of the Korean Peninsula, okay? He just shoots off at the mouth. But
yeah,
the problem
that makes sense to me. That it would be more of a show for his own people than a message for the world.
Yes. Yes. And the thing is China seems to understand that. In fact, they're warning us now. Chinese paper says China should stay neutral if North Korea attacks first. This is from Reuters, just August 11th. So that was yesterday. If North Korea launches an attack that threatens the United States, then China should stay neutral. But if the United States attacks first and tries to overthrow North Korea's government, China will stop them. a Chinese state-run newspaper said on Friday. So essentially, you got the government. This is their policy. President Donald Trump ratcheted up his rhetoric. You know, we know about that. China, North Korea's most important ally and trading partner, has reiterated calls for calm during the current crisis. It has expressed frustration with both Pyongyang's repeated nuclear and missile tests and with behavior from South Korea and the United States that it sees as escalating tensions. The wide red state-run Global Times, published by the ruling Communist Party's official People's Daily, wrote in an editorial that Beijing is not able to persuade either Washington or Pyongyang to back down. It needs to make clear its stance to all sides and make them understand that when their actions jeopardize China's interests, China will respond with a firm hand. And the paper, which does not represent government policy. Yeah, right. It's a state-run paper. Give me a break. China should also make clear that if North Korea launches missiles that threaten U.S. soil first and the U.S. retaliates, China will stay neutral. If the U.S. and South Korea carry out strikes and try to overthrow the North Korean regime and change the political patterns in the Korean Peninsula, China will prevent them from doing so. I'm telling you, we're on the precipice. If these psychopath, neocon, warmongering Satan worshipers aren't reeled in somehow, you know, I fear for the world. I really do.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's the ultimate depopulation plan.
Well, no. Tell you what, if they drop a bomb on, I just hope it's on my house. Just get it over with. I don't want to die a slow death from nuclear fallout.
Yeah, starved to death or something.
Yeah. Anyway, folks, yeah, we're talking about. Listen, don't be fearful, because whatever is going to happen is going to happen, and most of the time you fear the worst and it never materializes. So this is more than likely just another duck and cover kind of scenario where everybody's got to be fearful and scared because you're being manipulated to go along with an agenda. People are pushing agendas. That's the bottom line. A phone call from Florida. Hello. You're on the air.
Yes, Darren. I'm happy to speak to you once more.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to your show, and it's unbelievable how you find this material, how you could actually even bear to listen to these so-called experts. But what this Korean situation shows, total diplomatic failure. You know, we've wasted literally trillions, and it's not billions, nothing like billions. This is trillions of dollars. But, you know, we betrayed every country that we ever befriended. We stabbed them in the back. Remember what we did to Gaddafi because he turned over his nuclear weapon?
Oh, yes.
We the hell out of him and then had him assassinated in the country's total chaos.
Yep, Saddam Hussein,
three,
too.
For 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
You're absolutely right.
I said Saddam Hussein, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Saddam Hussein, anybody. I mean, look at Daddy Bush's partner there in Panama, what we did to him, right?
Noriega?
So. Noriega, we hunted him down like a dog, brought him to America, and kept him in prison for the rest of his life till he died. So this is so sick, and this is a betrayal to the American people by our supposed diplomats and leaders, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Remember, Madeleine Albright was dancing with Kim's father. I wish you could find some of her statements from that time period. If you could dig those up, they would be wonderful.
Interesting.
That when she went dancing, maybe we could send Madeleine Albright, the mass murderer, we could send her back there to dance with the son, because she's a wonderful dancer. Maybe they were doing the Viennese waltz, from what I remember. So thank you once again. Your program's so important. I wish you were on every day instead of the belligerent morons that we have on the air. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Harvey. Appreciate the call there. Talk to you later. Yeah, well, can't do anything about the belligerent morons. And speaking of belligerent and moronic, you know, just to give you an example that the problem starts here in the United States, okay? Donald Trump just came out, what was it, yesterday? It was in the last couple of days anyway, And this is his policy on Venezuela.
We're considering for Venezuela. What options are on the table right now to deal with this mess?
We have many options for Venezuela. And by the way, I'm not going to rule out a military option. We have many options for Venezuela. This is our neighbor. This is, you know, we're all over the world. And we have troops all over the world in places that are very, very far away. Venezuela is not very far away. And the people are suffering. And they're dying. We have many options for Venezuela, including a possible military option if necessary.
That would be U.S.-led, President?
Say?
That would be a U.S.-led military operation?
We don't talk about it, but a military operation and military option is certainly something that we could...
So isn't that, just what we need? Another destabilized country nearby?
Right. The people are suffering, so let's bring war
to
them.
Yeah, let's make them suffer a little more.
Everything is all done under the guise of human rights.
Yeah.
Except that they don't really care about the human rights of people. I mean, if you're dropping bombs on people, you can't very well care about their human rights, right?
Well, what is this all about? You know, CBS News did a report on North Korea, but after they, and I won't play that part of it. But after they were done talking about North Korea, they turned their attention to Trump's Twitter attack on Mitch McConnell and how divisions within the party could really be a serious problem for the country. Now, I wanted to play this because I think it serves as a good reminder of just why a lot of this stuff might be happening right now. We got the war saber-rattling going on right now, and yet it's easy to forget with all that's happening just how fragile our economic system has become.
This is really the first time the president has gone out of his way to criticize the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. And it all arose from comments that McConnell made in Kentucky saying the president had excessive expectations about the speed with which his legislative agenda could be accomplished. Well, first Dan Scavino, who is inside the White House and runs the social media account for the White House, attacked Mitch McConnell. And then now for two straight days, the president has as well. Why is this important? Because any real division between the president and Mitch McConnell will create real or could create real problems for the president in the month of September. And there are many pending issues that are vital to this president's legislative agenda. Tax reform has to get off the ground. Not only that, a budget has to be passed to avoid a government shutdown by the end of September. And sometime in the month of September and October, the federal debt ceiling needs to be raised. And it needs to be raised to avoid a government default. The votes don't exist for any of those three things yet. And for the president to get the votes in the Senate among those Senate Republicans, all 52 or nearly that many, he's going to need the absolute loyalty and spirited advocacy of the Senate Majority Leader.
So there you go. The debt ceiling has to be raised in September or October to avoid a government default. If the government defaults, what happens? Our credit rating goes bye-bye and everything just falls apart. We are teetering on the edge of total collapse here. And so this is what they've always done, is they've always, hey, look over here, look over here, look over here. Well, the real thing, real direction we all should be looking is exactly where they're not pointing, the exact opposite direction.
Emphasis on that. Wherever they point you to, look in the opposite direction or just look around to see what's really going on.
Exactly. Well, what's going on right now is we're out of time, and we have to get moving, but we appreciate everybody for being with us. Thanks, Vicki, as always. It goes by too fast.
It does indeed.
Anyway, pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. God bless each and every one of you. And join us back here next week. Please spread the word about the broadcast, and we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.